And welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. Well, renovations are beginning this month at the Elutsik Museum, which aim to create space for more exhibits, greater access to artifacts, and even a larger store, which I'm stoked about. This is a project that has been long in the planning phase as the museum. You're set to celebrate 30 years of operations in the next couple of years, in 2025. So to help us talk about the Elutsik Museum and the plan to preserve and share Elutsik heritage, especially during their temporary closure, are April Lactonen, Counselor, the Executive Director of the Elutsik Museum, and Juna Davidson, Director of Advancement and Operations. Welcome.
Chimai, thank you for having us.
Chimai, it's great to be here, Jared.
And thank you for spending your sunny lunchtime in this musty radio station. We've been doing some spring cleaning too, and it's pretty dusty around here. Let's go ahead and start off by talking about the big news, the museum's temporary closure with the renovations. This sounds huge. What's going on?
Yes. Well, we just shut down our gallery and store to the public about 2 weeks ago now. So some people might not be aware that our main operations area is now closed to the public. We are preparing to launch our renovation soon. And so we had to get that gallery all cleaned out and dismantle all the exhibits. And we've boxed up our store in preparation for opening up an off-site store at the Canna Marketplace whenever that is completed and ready to move into.
Very exciting times at the Elutsik Museum. It's weird to walk in there now and see the gallery all packed up and everything safely tucked away for construction.
How long was that? Because you have a lot of very delicate artifacts. How long did just that process of packing and cleaning and...
Well, so the actual active packing of the gallery, our staff are amazing, and our collection staff, with the support of some interns, got it done in about 1 week. However, the length of time it took to plan for that and to plan for the locations for each item and to make sure we had all of the right, like you said, packing materials, because things are so delicate, and as a nationally accredited museum, also an organization that deeply values the care of the project, the items that we care for. We had to do everything very specifically, precisely. It took probably about 2 or 3 months of planning, but it was well executed by our awesome staff.
And all right, so what is the new museum going to look like?
It's going to be beautiful.
It will be beautiful. And we do have a lot of plans for what's going to happen with the new renewed and expanded facility. And before we get into like the history of why we're doing this, I'd like to share a little bit about the public spaces, because one of the big things we learned in a large survey that we did of our patrons in 2019 was that people appreciated the quality of the existing facility. When they walked in, they could see this is a nice place, it's well cared for, it's clean and professional. But a lot of times we would get questions like, is this it? is it just these two rooms right here?
And what about upstairs?
They'd be like, and for a time we had Native Village of Afognak in the building, mm-hmm. Years ago, and they'd be like, well, can we tour the Native Village? And they thought it was some sort of exhibit. And so, we hate disappointing people. We want there to be more. People want to learn more about Elutsik heritage, about our history, and not just about the past anymore. People want to know now about what's the difference between a tribe and a corporation? And, what are the issues that are important to Elutsik people? So we're planning to roughly double the size of our gallery space. And we're also probably doubling the size of our store as well.
About double.
And a lot of the spaces that used to be on the first floor that were more like private internal spaces, like our laboratory and collections room, those are being relocated to the basement so that the existing space can be expanded into. We are also expanding off the side of the building. There's kind of a narrow strip of grass and trees in between the side of our building and the parking lot, and we're expanding out to the side to create kind of a wedge-shaped addition on the building. And that will allow us to have a large classroom and workshop space, which will be able to accommodate about 100 people. We're also adding a small living culture gallery, which will be a temporary gallery space where we might feature artists on a monthly basis or other small traveling exhibits. The entire entryway is going to also be reconfigured so that there's more introductory information about who the Aleutic people are and a better sort of staging area for when classrooms or large groups of tourists, like from the cruise ships, mm-hmm. arrive. Currently, it's a little awkward at the entrance when people are trying to come in, especially if we're also like trying to do a workshop in the rotunda while people are walking through, which has been a common issue in the past. So we're excited about the expansion of all the public spaces on the first floor. And then in the basement, where we're relocating the collections room and laboratory, the size of our collections room is also going to roughly double. So, you know, we ran out of space in our collections room over 10 years ago now, and we started having to store certain parts of our collections that were more sturdy, like our rock artifacts. They were starting to be stored in non-climate controlled spaces in the building because there just wasn't enough room in the collections room anymore. So that will no longer be an issue. We anticipate there's up to 35 years of expansion space in the planned collections room in the basement.
And what's really cool about everything April was just sharing is that essentially our entire first floor will now be publicly accessible space, whereas about only a third to half of it was previously publicly accessible. And so if anyone's ever come to an event or an annual meeting at the museum, it's hard when you get 100 people packed in there to actually see the performers and participate in the full event. And so now with all this expanded space, we'll be able to make sure everybody can see the dances and the speakers and the slideshows.
And all of this extra space is not going to be cheap.
No, it's not. So right now the budget for the project is over $14 million. And when we were planning the project a couple of years ago, we applied and received a $7.3 million grant from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, and also another $1.8 million grant from the Rasmussen Foundation. And at that point, we thought that those two grants were going to cover the entirety of the renovation. But anyone who's familiar with construction in rural Alaska may be aware that the budget you start with is often not the budget you end with. And so after we get an updated budget with the next set of plans, you know, the overall project was starting to balloon towards $20 million. Wow. And we did a lot of work to bring the budget back down, you know, reducing the fit and finish of the facility, and also removed one floor from the addition. We had been planning a three-floor addition, basement, first and second, and now it's going to be a basement and first floor addition, which will still help us achieve the primary goal of the project, which is to achieve a lot more public space for the community to use.
And maybe we'll get that roof top pavilion on the second floor with the next renovation.
We'll see.
In the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Maybe for the next executive director. I'm going to be tired after this one. But, you know, things have been going well with our fundraising. We've currently secured nearly $11 million, but we do still have a $3 million budget gap. So the Aleutic Museum staff is working very hard to locate and apply for additional grant funding, and we're also about to launch a public capital campaign. We've had a capital campaign committee that's been meeting now for probably almost 6 months.
Oh, yeah, about 6 months.
Yeah, and so this committee is made up of members of the community and also supporters who live off-island. And the goal for the capital campaign, the public campaign, is about $500,000, which we're hoping to raise in the community and with businesses around the state of Alaska.
And I imagine that much of the cost has to go into the, like you were saying, the climate control, the environmental conditions around preserving a lot of these artifacts.
Absolutely. there's very specific parameters, and neither one of us are completely the expert on that. That would be our collection staff, but we know that there are very specific parameters around the climate and the airflow and the lighting, and you know, there's a lot that goes into carefully taking the responsibility to care for these historical and also contemporary artworks that mm-hmm. we have the privilege of preserving in our collections.
And you know, we have a lot of new folks on the island and visiting the island. Especially, I think we last spoke, Juna, back in last fall. Mm-hmm. I think when you were last on the show. So can we just backtrack just a little bit and can you talk about the unique nature of the Aleutic Museum? It's not just a museum. It's a an archaeological repository. It's about linguistic preservation. It's a museum. It's a cultural center. So how did that germinate?
That's a great question, and it goes back probably hundreds of years, but we won't go back that far right now. We'll go back to the 1980s when the Kodiak Area Native Association had a culture and heritage division. And at that time, they were raising money to do things like small archaeological digs. There was a growing sense within the Native community that we wanted to take control back of our culture. Because for many decades, archaeologists would come to Kodiak Island, they would do massive archaeological digs and take all the artifacts away to mm-hmm. museums far away. And sometimes they weren't just taking artifacts, they were also taking ancestral remains. We also started to feel that in comparison to many other Native tribes in the state, the Kodiak Aleutic region had been really in contact with Western cultures for probably among the longest out of any Native culture in Alaska. So few of our young people were growing up speaking the language. More and more elders who knew the language were passing away. A lot of traditional skills had been lost over the course of the Russian period and the American period. So during the 1980s, when Kana started doing the cultural movement, it was really a revelation. Very few Native communities had taken control over their archaeological programs, but that's what was happening in Karluk and in Larsen Bay. Native people themselves were deciding what they wanted to learn about our ancestors. Over time, Kana determined that because their main focus was as a social services and health services nonprofit, they felt that eventually that culture and heritage division should spin off and become its own nonprofit. And then the Exxon Valdez oil spill happened in 1989, and as a result of the court case that came out of that tragedy, funds became available for nonprofits for research and restoration activities in the oiled region. As a result of that, Kana was able to secure a grant to help build the original first floor of the facility that we're in now. It was kind of a partnership between Natives of Kodiak and Kana, where Natives of Kodiak owned the basement and second floor, and then Kana owned the first floor, which became the Aleutic Museum. And so that was in 1995 when we originally opened. At that time, we had 3 staff members and 150,000 objects in our repository. Today, we have 15 staff members and over 250,000 objects in our repository, but we were still, up until recently, just in that same floor mm-hmm. in the building, and we were busting out at the seams. Our collections room was full. People were sitting all in different parts of the laboratory without adequate office space, and so we started leasing parts of the building, and eventually our board of directors started working together, the different Native corporations in Kana, and NOK, Natives of Kodiak, ended up agreeing to sell out their portion of the building to Koniag, and then Koniag and Kana, at the same time, on the same day, in October of 2021, donated the facility to us. Mm-hmm. And that was actually one of the key things that had to happen for us to be able to get grants to renovate the facility, because nobody was going to give us a grant to renovate a facility that we were just occupying,
right?
So it's kind of a long story, but things really kind of all came together at once, and suddenly we were preparing for a renovation when for decades it felt like we had been hoping and praying and planning, but nothing was really gaining traction until all of those events in 2021.
thanks for that rundown.
Just a quick 5-minute history.
Yeah, right. Juna, you've got some things to talk about in terms of like what is the museum doing during the closure, during the renovations? This is going to be what 2 years of almost 2 years.
18 months.
18 months of construction.
Hear.
But there's been I will say you know there's been some talk that the museum is closed. So there's going to be nothing, right, you know, for the next thing. But that's far from the truth, right? What is...
Yeah, I get that question at the grocery store and at the post office. Juno, what are you guys doing? The museum's closed. And the truth is that a lot of people don't even realize that, like you were saying earlier, the museum is so much more than just a museum, although being just a museum is great. But we have language program, we have education program, we have active archaeology program. So all of our staff are maintaining a very busy schedule. It's just looking a little different. You know, in our educational programming, instead of having school groups come in and get the guided tours, our staff will be, for those 2 years, pushing into the classrooms, bringing our mobile museum that has our teaching collection artifacts and replica artifacts, and they'll bring those into classrooms and to other community spaces so that people can still see a little bit of the history. And then our store, we're going to move into, as April mentioned earlier, the Canna Marketplace. We've secured the lease for a smaller store in the new wonderful marketplace downtown. We're very excited to be a part of the beginning of that for the revitalization of downtown Kodiak. So myself and my store staff will move over there, and we will have a public space where people can come and shop from all of the amazing and talented Alutiiq and other artists that we support in our store. And we actually were excited to realize that the store space in the marketplace is a little larger than what we had expected. So we're going to bring some of the panels from the gallery and put them up as a sort of decor in the store. So it's not going to be the same as coming to the museum and visiting the actual historical objects and artifacts, but you'll still get to see pieces of the culture in the displays that we'll have in the store. And until the Canna Marketplace is open, our store staff is working on maintaining and updating our website with new items weekly, and we're going to be doing some pop-ups until the marketplace opens. So our first pop-up is going to be on August 10th and 11th, which are the next two cruise ship days, and we will be in the Shunack Tribal Hall on those days. I think the Thursday is from 10 to 4, and then the Friday is from noon to 4, based on the cruise ship hours. And we'll have store staff there with a selection of museum merchandise, as well as some of our educational staff will be there with the mobile museum that I had mentioned. So there'll still be lots of ways that people can access our resources and lots of ways that we can still provide services. Certainly, like, I want to put out there a plug. If someone's like, well, you know, my classroom, I want to learn more about Alutiiq culture, we can't go to the museum, call the museum and work with our staff, and we can come in and do presentations. We can do presentations for organizations. We want to do everything we can to help people realize that we are still actively working and we still have active programming going on. And beyond that, we also have a ton of resources on our website that are freely available for people to download. We just released a wonderful coloring book illustrated by Hannah Scholl, and it's available on our website for download. You also can purchase a physical copy from our store. And there's all kinds of educational lesson plans available on our website. There is a guided tour of our previous gallery,
right,
led by archaeologist Patrick Saltonstall and Alutiiq Language and Living Culture Manager Derek Shia. It's not the same as being there in person, but it's still a way to connect to the culture. And so I really encourage people to continue to reach out to the museum, because we are all still actively working and we are still here to serve the community and help people connect to Alutiiq culture.
Another thing that Juna alluded to in regards to our store website is that right now, kind of similar to what we did during the pandemic, if local people want to purchase store items, they can purchase it on our store website, and then there's a coupon code that says skip shipping 99615. By doing that, it removes the shipping charges, and then our store staff would work with the person who purchased it to arrange pickup. So they can just come to the museum building, and then the store staff would bring out the items. Or you can wait for one of those pop-up opportunities, but we really wanted to make sure that people would have a good opportunity to still get those wonderful gifts and support the local artists in that way.
Well, and along those lines, you know, we look at our store as a museum program. It's not just a retail location. The goal of the store is to lift up Indigenous artists living their culture and to create opportunities for consumers and visitors to the island and locals who are purchasing gifts to buy genuine, authentic Native artwork. And so we will go out of our way to help people continue to shop. So even too, if somebody has a particular artist in mind, they can contact us and we'll set up an appointment with our store manager, and she'll do a showing of what we have from that artist for that person to make a purchase. Because we want people to be able to continue to access what we have to offer, and we want artists to continue to be supported.
The plug for the online exhibits are nice. The Daniel Harmon one is also very nice. He's been in the news quite a bit over the past couple of weeks. So, check those out. So you're also still continuing obvious archaeological efforts, mm-hmm. continuing repatriation mm-hmm. efforts also. Anything new on those fronts? Any exciting archaeological or repatriation opportunities?
Absolutely. So our archaeologist team and our interns have already done one archaeological dig so far this summer. And they also did a number of surveys, which involve either paddling along the coast or walking along a landscape or potentially flying over it if we have the grant funding to do so. Poor Patrick, he's done a lot of paddling in the past few years. But in doing so, we have discovered 80 new archaeological sites just so far this year.
Wow.
It's just amazing how many archaeological sites are present on the landscape and how rich the Aleutic history is on Kodiak to have created so much of a living culture that's kind of buried in the library of our past.
It seems like it's one of the richest archaeological opportunities in the state. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked with Patrick last year about it.
I don't know what percentage of square miles the island is in comparison to the state of Alaska, but I believe we may have up to 20% of all archaeological sites documented here. Because of the long history of the Aleutic Museum doing archaeology virtually every year since we opened in mm-hmm. 1995. So the breadth and depth of knowledge that we have been able to gain through all of this research is really phenomenal. And someday Amy and Patrick are going to make just the most amazing book when they retire. Starting a new project to write this comprehensive prehistory. And in terms of repatriation, we have been working with some tribes on various repatriation efforts. One of them involves a collection of human hair that is at the Peabody Museum. And actually, my great uncle's hair is present in that collection. We're trying to figure out the protocol for repatriating samples of people as opposed to human remains. So that's one of the things we're working on. And also, we're continuing our work with residential school repatriation. Some people mm-hmm. may recall last year we were successful in bringing home Anastasia Ashawak to be reinterred in Old Harbor near her family members. She had passed away at the Carlisle Indian School in, I think, 1904. And another girl that passed away at the same school, her name was Periscovia Friendoff, or at least that was her name that she was going by when she passed away. We had a lot more trouble locating living descendants of Periscovia because at that time people often changed their last name multiple times during their lives. And so we found her under, I think, at least four different last names, none of which connected to anyone that we could locate in the Russian Orthodox records or other genealogical resources. But we did find that her her mother had remarried after Periscovia's father died. Her mother married a man named Mikhail Yakuchev of Afognak, and her and Mikhail had a son, Mikhail Jr. And when Mike Jr. became an adult, he moved up to Iklutna and integrated with the Iklutna tribe. And that was one reason we had trouble finding him for so long, because in a lot of sources, he was listed as a native from up there, even though we did a lot of research and determined there was no overlap. This was the same person that had been in Afognak and then moved up there. So there is a descendant that we have found of Periscovia's stepbrother, and we're hoping to move that forward with a repatriation in 2024. So a lot of work going on. I also recalled that we've been working on some books. So
the publications keep coming.
Yes, we are. You know, you could call us a museum, but you could also call us a publishing house, because with so many Aleutic people living all over the world now,
but
for the most part in the Pacific Northwest and other parts of Alaska, we're always looking for ways to reach them and provide the same type of education to Aleutic people living far away as we can here at home. And so a lot of times that involves books, because books are portable. You can take them anywhere. You can bring them to the beach and learn about your culture. And in the past year, you know, we've released a book about Aleutic legends, an instructional book on how to make an Aleutic headdress. Right now, we have an Aleutic language textbook that I co-authored with Derek Shaya. That one is going to be coming out this fall. I'm not sure if it'll be a PDF or print book right now, but it's definitely coming, and we already have interest with the Kodiak High School Aleutic language class to use that book. And I've been working furiously over the past few weeks on my chapter for the Aleutic history textbook. This is going to be a high school level textbook, probably over 200 pages. I was tasked with the American period, and wow, that was really overwhelming.
I can imagine.
I was like 40 pages in, and I wasn't even to the Exxon Valdez oil spill yet, and it was, it's been a lot of work. I'm still kind of scraping away at the last parts of that, but, you know, covering our prehistory, and then the Russian period, and the American period, there's a lot of content, and it's also a big responsibility to try to figure out, you know, what do we need people to know about Aleutic and Kodiak history.
And you still have Aleutic Word of the Week and First Friday podcast. Is that still going, or is that?
Yeah, the Legends for, it's the first Friday of each month.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we have just a few seconds left to run down real quick. What's other than the renovations, you've got a textbook, anything else on the horizon that we should be looking out for? The capital campaign, obviously.
Well, as far as programming, you know, we've had such great success and interest in our headdress tutorials and our instruction booklet for that. So we're working with Susie Malutin now to do a regalia instruction video and booklet as well, that I believe we expect it to be ready end of the year, beginning of the new year.
Yes, people really want, nowadays, people want their own regalia. When I was growing up, it was only the Kodiak Aleutic dancers that had regalia. Now people want their own version to wear to important events in their lives, and so I call it regalia for the people. We have a bunch of little projects that are going to result in people being able to have their own full set of regalia that they can wear to events, and also to our grand reopening in May of 2025, where we're going to have a culture festival and a red carpet regalia pageant.
I'm so excited about this. I love party planning. And speaking of, I do want to let people know that there will be an event this month for the Aleutic Museum. It'll be our annual meeting. So on August 26th at 1 p.m., we have a ceremonial groundbreaking for the construction. And we'll be inviting our board of directors to come for that. And then from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Cognac Building on Near Island on August 26th, we will have our annual meeting. Our full staff will be there. We'll have our mobile museum. We'll have a pop-up store. We'll have presentations about all the many things we've done in the last year and some of the new things on the horizon. And it'll be a great opportunity for people to come connect with our staff in person during this sort of flowing time of activity.
Well, thank you so much. That is our time. Thank you, April Lectone, Counselor, Executive Director of the Illogic Museum, and Juna Davidson, Director of Advancement and Operations. Thanks so much for coming on Talk of the Rock.
Thank you, Kamixi.
Thank you.